From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Every Sunday, I read the New York Times Book Review, and one of my favorite features in the book review is By the Book. It's a column in which famous authors, actors, musicians, etc., respond to questions about their reading habits. Pamela Paul is my guest this week. You've heard her on NPR, and she is the editor of the New York Times Book Review. Her books include The Starter Marriage and The Future of Matrimony, Parenting Incorporated, How the Billion-Dollar Baby Business Has Changed the Way We Raise Our Children, and Pornified, How Pornography is Damaging Our Lives, Our Relationships, and Our Families. As the editor of the book review, she's responsible for the delightful column By the Book and has now compiled them into a book, By the Book, Writers on Literature and Literary Life from the New York Times Book Review. Pamela Paul, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you so much for having me.
Pamela Paul, what's on your nightstand right now?
Oh, gosh. It's a looming nightstand. I actually have, some people answer this literally, and I will too. I have a nightstand piled with books, and then I have a platform bed, which basically is like one big nightstand that wraps around the bed that is piled high with books. And right now, I am reading the sort of top secret part of my answer is that I'm reading a lot of books that are contenders for our 10 best books of the year. So I can't reveal the exact books that I'm reading at the very moment, but I will reveal some backlists, which I love to read, that's on my book stand. I've got Housekeeping, the Marilynne Robinson, which I've never read and have always wanted to go back and read. And I have just finished reading, actually, California author, everything that Dave Eggers ever wrote, because I did an event with him about a week ago out in San Francisco. And what else is on that book stand? You know, a few books actually from last year that I never got around to reading. I read, I wanted to read Lawrence in Arabia, Scott Anderson's book, which I still haven't gotten to.
That's great.
Another book.
I love that book.
I'm dying to read it. It's such an interesting history. Mm-hmm. And then I was on a Ben McIntyre kick after reading A Spy Among Friends earlier this year. So I plan to go back and read Operation Mincemeat.
Do you, as the editor of the book review, I still want to go back. Now, I want to go back and ask you more questions from your By the Book column. But first, as editor of the book review, do you feel the need to read the books that are reviewed in the book review or not?
Well, I could never read all of them. None of us could ever read all of them. You know, we're reviewing between 20 and 40 and sometimes more books a week in the book review. I have a staff of editors who are selecting the books under review to decide whether we should include them, send them out to a reviewer for inclusion in the book review. So I don't read everything, but I try to stay on top of it. I also, you know, I think like most readers, I don't just read what's new. I also read a lot of, you know, books that came out last year or 5 years ago or 100 years ago. So I think that since I've taken this job, I've skewed my reading a little bit more toward the contemporary, just to stay abreast of what's going on in the publishing world and to get a sense of what new writers are out there and especially at this time of year to help figure out what's going to make the cut in terms of our notable books. But, you know, I'm a varied, promiscuous reader, so it's all over the place.
Now, when you send a book out to a reviewer, you've had some unusual people reviewing books that are not necessarily authors. I remember, for instance, a book about Paul McCartney that was reviewed by Suzanne Vega. How do you decide who's going to review what book?
Well, you know, I like the reviews, the assignments to be a bit surprising. I mean, you want to have a mix of esteemed literary critics like Cynthia Ozick and then, you know, new voices, people who've never written a book review before, that totally unexpected. One of the great book reviewers that I brought in first for children's books and now he's doing adult books for us is the comedian Michael Ian Black. And you sort of never would know that he would be a good reviewer, but he is, in fact, an excellent reviewer. And then just people, again, the odd mix. So you mentioned Suzanne Vega reviewing Paul McCartney. That was before my time, but I did assign Patti Smith to review the new Murakami novel. this past August, because, you know, in this case, it was it resulted from a failed assignment. I asked Patty to review a different novel, something that was more of an obvious fit because the novel was about a rock musician. And she said no, but she told me a little bit about what she does like to read, and she reads a lot of fiction in translation, and said that, you know, her favorite author of the moment was Murakami, and said she reads everything that he has written. And so as soon as I heard about Colorless Tsukuru Kazaki and his Years of Pilgrimage, the Murakami novel that came out this August, I immediately asked Patty to review it, and this was the first book review that she'd ever written. So, you know, there isn't a hard and fast rule. It's the most exciting creative part of the book review in terms of what we do as editors is figure out, you know, how to get that interesting match. And one of the things that differentiates the book review from the daily books that are reviewed in the New York Times is that in the New York Times, you know in the daily pages that you're going to have one of our three staff critics. It's going to be Michiko Kakutani, Janet Maslin, or Dwight Garner reviewing it. With the book review, we sort of start in the opposite direction. Once we have a book, we say, well, who would be the best person to review this book? Who would we most want to read? And so it's coming up with that wish list. And sometimes it's, you know, an obvious match because it's someone who, let's say, has just written an exciting new novel about women in Africa, and here's someone coming out with short fiction about women in Africa. And sometimes it's, you know, again, something a little bit more unexpected. What I don't like are the sort of color-by-numbers assignments of, you know, well, we have a book on China, so let's grab the China expert, or, you know, here's a new book by an African-American woman from the South. Let's find another African-American woman from the South. I just think that there should be an element of surprise, and it just shouldn't be always so obvious.
I was looking in your new book, which is called By the Book, Writers on Literature and Literary Life from the New York Times Book Review, and we, of all the authors you've had on in your little column and all the ones we've had here that you've compiled in the book, we have one, only one overlapping one, which I thought was
interesting. Oh, wow.
That was Rachel Kushner. She was on the show here, and I read her little interview in your book, and I found out that she and I both like to read our books in the tub.
Yes, you know, there are a lot of people who like to read in the tub. It's one of those reasons why the Kindle or a tablet reader doesn't work for everyone.
Because you're afraid to drop it, and you'll drop it in the tub, and that'll be the end of it.
Yes, that is one of the dangers of e-readers, apparently.
I guess so. I wonder if you'd get like a terrible shock, if it could kill you if you dropped your tablet in the...
That would be a terrible way to die.
Wouldn't it? I died reading.
Yes, death by book, death by e-book.
Because I always tell people that exercise is very bad for them. Because you always see people, you know, they've injured themselves doing some kind of exercise, whereas you never see anybody who injured themselves lying in bed reading.
Well, maybe we'll see it now.
Could be. All right. When you're... Just a couple more questions about the book review, because I love the book review so much. I notice sometimes even you'll have a review in the book review that's already been reviewed in the daily paper.
Well, that's because we serve very different functions. So again, with the daily reviews, you know who you're going to have review it, and you're getting that critic's take. And what we're doing is often, first of all, going beyond the people, you know, the staff of the New York Times, and going outside to novelists, to academics, to other authors, poets, people from out, you know, within the arts, and also other public figures. I mean, we had Bill Clinton, for example, review the most recent Robert Caro biography.
Oh yeah, that was a fantastic.
Lyndon Johnson.
I love that article. So, I love the book, and I love the article that President Clinton.
Yeah, and the other thing that we're doing is the writing is a little bit different. We have people can often go at a greater length. The reviews in the book reviews tend to be a bit more essayistic, a little bit more literary criticism. Often there's a bit more context to the review, so it's sort of it's a different kind of thing. And I think that having both of them, to my mind, really exemplifies the New York Times commitment to covering books. Because there are so many newspapers now that don't even, you know, have daily critics, and we are the only one that still has a freestanding Sunday book review.
In your book, Scott Turow wrote that interesting little foreword to the book in which he talks about, you know, the future of, you know, books on a bookshelf or on your nightstand, and how, you know, you would carefully choose the books that would be on your bookshelf so that people could see what you've been reading or what you have, what you love. And that's what's so much fun about the Buy the Book column, where you get to find out that you share a love of a certain book with... I was just reading Bob Odenkirk, and he was saying he loved Harpo Speaks, which is one of my favorite books. So I love that about the column. How did you come up with the idea of Buy the Book?
Well, you know, it's funny. There were a few different sort of threads that went into it. One was that, you know, I've always thought of my own life as really being illustrated by the books and informed by the books that I read. So ever since I was 17, I've actually kept what I call my book of books, or Bob, where I write down the name of every book that I've ever read, and occasionally where I was when I read it, if I was living abroad or traveling. And that book, you know, in lieu of a diary, which I have never been able to keep, really sort of tells this narrative.
Do you ever look back at it and say, well, I don't remember reading
it? I look back at it all the time.
And do you ever say, I don't remember that I read that book?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I will say that one of the reasons that I started is because I have a terrible memory, and I not only forget what is in the books that I've read, I forget that I've read them all together. So it's very useful to have it because it reminds me of what I've read. The nice thing is that it allows me to reread books with total thorough enjoyment, and I'm taken, you know, aback anew by every plot twist because I don't remember them from the first time around.
That's how I am with James Bond movies.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, nobody ever knows the plot of a James Bond movie.
No, and if 5 minutes after you've seen it, you can watch it again, if you so desire.
I felt like there was, you know, that people's lives really can be told through the books that they read, and that many profiles, you know, of whether it's of an author or another public figure, a musician, a politician, they never really ask the questions that I think that are the most interesting, which are, you know, not about, I mean, yes, we all want the gossip and this and that, but I like to know about someone's inner life and their intellectual life and just their, you know, that what they consume for pleasure. You know, anytime you're at a cocktail party or in dinner table conversation, it's, you know, what movie have you seen recently, or what book are you reading, or, you know, what have you read lately that's good? Those are the answers that, I mean, those are the questions that are interesting to talk about. So I thought, well, why don't we ask people those questions, you know, and not just the what are you reading right now, but what's your favorite book, you know, from childhood? And if you had to name one book that made you who you are today, what would that book be? Or if you could make the president read one book, what would you get him to read? To me, those are interesting, telling questions. And they, for the reader, I think, work two ways. On the one hand, it's great because you can come up with, you know, excellent recommendations. So it's this kind of word of mouth from these very interesting people. And then also, on the other hand, it really tells a different, you know, creates a different kind of profile of these figures that, you know, many of us think we might know quite well, but actually have no idea what they read. I mean, Sting, for example, I mean, many people have read many profiles of Sting and could sort of give a broad outline of his career, but they don't know about what books he likes, or perhaps they know of Lolita, but beyond that, don't know what he's read. And so I think that it's a really different kind of perspective on public figures.
We're speaking with Pamela Paul, and in addition to being the editor of the New York Times Book Review, she's just compiled a book of her By the Book column called By the Book. Pamela Paul, what book would you urge President Obama to read?
Oh, gosh, you're going to ask me the hardest of all the questions. You know,
well, you know, before you answer, let me ask this question. How are your interviews conducted? Do you talk to them on the phone like you and I are talking? Do you sit across from them, or do you submit them and they have a chance to write their answer down with great thought?
You know, this is actually, we've just illustrated exactly why I don't ask them on the phone or even in person. The interviews are done in writing, and as a journalist, that's something that I never do because I think that you don't get, you know, when you're interviewing someone, and you ask a question, you there's a lot that is gained by the immediacy of forcing someone to respond and to hearing their tone of voice and being able to follow up on it. But when you're asking something about a book, for example, if you're asking Bruce Springsteen, who we interviewed just last month, what's the best book ever written on music, you don't want to hear what he's going to say off the top of his head. You want him to, like, go back and to really think hard and maybe look through his personal library and come up with the best answer and then also be able to explain why. So I think this is the kind of interview that requires a lot of thought. And I know that if I were forced to answer the questions myself, I would be looking at that book of books, that Bob that I referred to earlier, to see, okay, what have I read so that I can remember it and then give a little thought as to, you know, why each a particular book might fit an answer.
Of course, I just assumed that you would have answers to these questions at the top of your head because you ask them all the time, so you must think about them constantly.
I do think about them, but I think about what other people might answer, not necessarily myself. I think that, I think Obama, I think I would recommend that he read something incredibly diverting because he's got a lot of heavy material, I would imagine, on his plate right now.
Audacity of Hope, that's a good book. He could read that one.
I'm sorry?
Audacity of Hope, that's a good book.
Right.
Something he could read that.
Actually, it's funny, when I asked Colin Powell, another public figure, about sort of the most disappointing book he'd read recently, he said his own memoir.
Huh, interesting.
Yes. Interesting. I think he's the only person who answered that, and I think he answered it truthfully. He's very humble.
Huh. I've never read his memoir, so I don't know if it's any good or not. Did you read it?
I did not. Mm-hmm. I did not. But he said in his answer, he said that so many politicians' books are awfully disappointing, and that his was no exception.
Has anybody ever responded to your questions in such a mundane way that you said, "I think we'll run a different interview instead"?
No, you know, we haven't had to go that route. I think luckily we're asking people enough varied questions, and you know, they have a choice also as to what kind of questions, which questions they want to answer. They usually I give them about 20 questions and ask them to pick at least 12. Some of them answer all of them. Some of them answer only 12. But again, this is the kind of interview where you want to get people talking about things that they are interested in. If you ask someone about their favorite childhood book and they, you know, don't remember, well, I suppose that's telling for them to say, you know, I have no recollection of anything I read during childhood. But for the most part, you want them to focus their answers on questions that excite them.
Yeah. Now, you used to be a children's book. You were the children's book editor of the thing before you became the full editor of the thing.
Yes.
So do you read a lot of children's books? Well, you have children, so maybe you have.
I do read a lot of children's books. I have children, and I read them with them, and I read them before they read them sometimes, and sometimes I read them all by myself. So I'm a huge fan of children's literature. I mean, kids' books are the books that stay with us throughout our entire lives. These are the books that make people into readers. So I think, you know, sometimes you hear people sort of denigrate children's books or think of them as, you know, sort of dismiss them as unimportant. But these are the books that, you know, again, that make writers, that make readers. There are so many people in By the Book who I interviewed when I asked them, you know, who's their literary heroine or what character inspired you the most? Many of them answered Jo March from Little Women. Mm. So many women authors, I think, were inspired to write because of that character.
Well, there are, you know, a handful of young adult books and children's books that are really important to me. But it seems to me now that a lot of the young adult books have to do with dystopian futures and hunting and killing.
You know, there's always a trend in YA and many sub-trends, and for a while it was paranormal romance and vampires, then it was dystopia, and then it was post-apocalyptic thrillers. But I think that, you know, for every book like that, there are really noteworthy exceptions, and the most obvious one is John Green's The Fault in Our Stars, which was about, you know, two teenagers dying of cancer and a love story, and who would have predicted that in the midst of, you know, Divergent and The Hunger Games, that would become, you know, the best-selling book and the most critically acclaimed YA book of the year. There's some great YA literature, and you know what's amazing is that it's a genre that almost didn't exist when many of us were growing up. So I think that, you know, hopefully people will read it before they dismiss it out of hand.
A lot of the people who have been, I would say everybody, 100% of the people who have been here on From the Bookshelf are people who I asked to be on the show, and they said yes. But the people who haven't been on the show that I've asked have said no, which I think is so strange that people will say no. But have you had that experience where you asked somebody to answer your 20 questions and they said no, thank you?
Very few people have said no. Very few. I could count them on one hand.
Yeah.
It's actually become such a popular column that it is entirely booked for 2015.
Wow.
And you can
only do 52 a year, right?
I can only do 52 a year, yes. And it ends up feeling like a very small number when you're trying to get people in and squeeze somehow, hope for openings, hope for people's schedules to change. And there are always last-minute additions and sometimes publication schedules move around, but it's always a tight squeeze. So I'm already looking into 2016 with excitement and anticipation of that wide open space that I can fill in.
Yes. I mean, it must be awkward to have to say to someone, no,
yes.
Mrs. Clinton, I'm sorry, but we don't have room for you.
So Mrs. Clinton, we did squeeze in, I have to say. She was in earlier this year. And Bruce Springsteen was a late, but I think very exciting and important, worthy squeeze. We've had some, you know, there are, however, a lot of people from Hollywood, for example, who have wanted to be in it and have had to either wait a year for there to be an opening, or I've just had to say no because, you know, the movies get scheduled at a much later date, generally speaking, than do books. So for Hollywood to schedule an interview, they're used to, you know, 4 to 8 weeks of a lead time, whereas this is often scheduled, you know, 6 to 12 months out.
Yeah. A lot of people, a lot of those movie people in Hollywood, they haven't read any books, so they wouldn't be able to... Just kidding.
You know, that's probably true, but it's also really wonderful to get, you know, and I think that the kind of actors that we ask are the kind of actors that want to be in the column are those who really read. So you mentioned Bob Odenkirk. I mean, he writes too, but he is definitely an avid reader. Earlier this year, we had Bill Hader from Saturday Night Live,
yeah.
Who, I mean, he had a fantastic reading list. Hugh Dancy, the actor who's married to Claire Danes and, you know, been in many, many films and plays in his own right, also a big reader. So we try to choose wisely, and I think we've gotten some who are Emma Thompson, also, I would say, another notable.
So if you could invite me and an author from the past to dinner, who would pick up the check?
Who would pick up the check?
Oh, I don't know. I was just trying to think of questions from your... I guess you've never asked that particular one.
I haven't asked about who would pay. I've asked about who people would bring to dinner, and that's always a fun one. Some of them, you know, say I avoid literary dinners, you know, altogether. They just want nothing to do with having anyone come to dinner.
They don't want to play the fantasy game of it?
No. Most people, when I ask them, you know, if they could meet any author, dead or alive, I would say the most popular one, probably not surprising,
Shakespeare.
Is Shakespeare. They just want to know.
They want to know. Did you really write this stuff?
That's right. Or is it really you? Who are you? How did you do it?
By the way, these columns in the book version of By the Book, they're slightly longer than the ones in the paper.
They are, actually. In some cases, they're quite a bit longer because we only have a page in the book review, and we run these in full online. But for many of our loyal print readers, this is their first time encountering many of the questions and answers. And I have to say, the entirety is often very high quality. It's really hard to edit down, so it was very nice to be able to include them in full because it's not necessarily the best answers that are included in the print edition. Sometimes it's just about the mix and about what fits on the page, and I often, it's a very excruciating edit to have to do to cut out and figure out which ones actually go in the print version. So this is the truly unedited, unexpurgated edition of Buy the Book.
I think it's a lovely gift book, and I think it's the perfect book to read in the loo.
Yes, I know. There's nothing wrong with a good bathroom book, I say. I have no problem with reading in the bathroom or books that sit on coffee tables, because those are the kind of books that, you know, yes, you can sit there and you can read the entire thing from beginning to end, but a lot of us like to flip through books.
Dip in,
yes. Hmm.
This book...
Just not drop into the bathtub.
No, just don't drop it. Right. Dip in, but don't drop. This book, it's called Buy the Book, Writers on Literature and the Literary Life from the New York Times Book Review, and it was compiled by the editor of the New York Times Book Review, my guest, Pamela Paul. Thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time and you'll come back and see us again next week. Check out our podcast page. It's called FromTheBookshelf.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Pamela Paul. Her new book, Buy the Book, Writers on Literature and Literary Life from the New York Times Book Review. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.